Your last name is pronounced Wisbisky?
Yeah.
Okay.
Wisbisky.
Wisbisky. Got it.
That's pretty good. Most people butcher it.
Wisbisky. Am I saying it right?
Yeah, Wisbisky,
okay.
Yep.
Okay. I wouldn't have known if I weren't for listening to some of your other podcasts.
Oh.
I'd have probably butchered it too.
Yeah, you probably were going, what, a couple years back? I haven't really done a whole lot of stuff recently.
Okay. Yeah, there was one. I'm not sure the woman who was doing this. The podcast is Laid Open, Power of the Humble Coach. Who is this?
Oh, yeah.
What's her face?
Charissa?
Charna.
Charna.
Charna, yeah. That was semi-recent, yeah. I think that was earlier this year.
Oh, yeah, a lot of these.
Either way, it's all good. You went to the event, so you have a better perspective than anybody who's ever interviewed me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Because you've seen, like, an actual event, you know?
Is everything, like, from the event for the game to talk about?
Yeah, absolutely. Everything,
I
bro.
Don't know if there's, like, any secrets that, like,
no.
For just the event, you're just, you're open.
I do and I don't.
Yeah.
No, I'm not opposed to it at all.
Cool.
Yeah.
Dope.
Cool.
All right.
Dope.
Let us know when you're rolling, James.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. All right, welcome everyone to another episode of the NeuroFlex podcast. I am your host, Toby Passman. On the show with us today, we have a special guest, Anton Wisbisky, who is the owner of the social media company I Am Powerful, along with being a business consultant, a coach, who is on a mission to help people break through illusions that are holding them back. So Anton, welcome to the show.
Awesome, man. Thank you for having me.
Of course.
Excited to get into it.
Absolutely. So just a little preface, you know, Anton and I worked together at a recent event that you put on. It was a really cool experience. We got introduced by a mutual friend on Instagram and did some brain mapping on some volunteers at the event to measure how these different breathwork exercises were really transforming the brain on a biological level. So it was really cool stuff to see. And I'm really, really happy to have gone to the event and participated.
Yeah, I was happy to have you, man. It's cool to, you know, take something that you have like a philosophy about and like see that not only is the philosophy true, it's better than true according to science, which is awesome. So I was grateful that you came as well.
Definitely so. Yeah. Well, just starting off, like tell me a little bit about your upbringing and just how you kind of got into this self-development journey yourself.
Yeah, man. I think pain is usually the thing that gets people on this type of path. But yeah, I mean, it started really young for me, man. When I was like 13, 14 years old, I started having like super hardcore panic attacks, like every single day. And I didn't know why. And yeah, long story short, man, went on antidepressants, you know, because back in those days, it was like, mental health wasn't as prevalent as it is today. Like everyone has anxiety, everyone has depression nowadays. But back then, like having a 13-year-old kid have like very severe panic attacks, I went to the hospital multiple times. You know, doctors didn't know what was wrong with me. All my brain was fine. Like they like measured my heart because I was convinced like I had heart disease. Then I was convinced I had something wrong with my brain, which is pretty normal for people with extreme anxiety. But yeah, I it's just pain, man. And then as I got a little bit older, I got introduced. I watched a movie called The Secret, all about how like your thoughts become things. Now I don't agree at all with everything in the movie, but at that time in my life, as a 16-year-old kid, it gave me hope that I could actually take control of my life. And it started by my thinking, according to the movie. And that was like the first time in my life, you know, being I was a kid, that I realized, huh, like maybe it doesn't have to be this way. So I started making some really positive changes. A few years later, I had my own business, or not even a few years later, 6 months later, I had started my own business at the age of 16. And I started doing really good in high school, actually. And, you know, I had a vision of like where I wanted to go. And I think that's what like cured me. Not long term, but it relieved some of my symptoms, knowing that I could have something positive to look forward to my future. Like, I believe if everyone has an anticipating tomorrow, they can get through anything hard today. Like, if it's good, going to be good tomorrow, I can get through anything hard today. So that vision of my future really pulled me to stay on the path of bettering myself, really. So I wouldn't say I cured the anxiety, but I was able to function as a normal human being. I found happiness. I loved what I did. And then as I got older, like, it came back in different ways when I went through some like really traumatic experience and hardships. And yeah, I don't want to keep going too far, but that's the essence of it. Pain. Yeah. Pain brought me on the path.
Yeah. No, they always talk about, like, you know, when you see someone like very mature at a young age, it's like, what got you there? It's oftentimes those painful,
always
really traumatic experiences that I think like oftentimes either like make or break someone, you know.
100%.
Like, soldiers coming back from war, and it's like some of them come back with PTSD and they're super damaged, and then other times those same people that are, you know, the people went through similar circumstances but then are able to, you know, grow and expand from that pain.
100%.
Not still suffering, but
yep. I always tell people there's only one difference between a hero and a villain, and it's simply how they respond to pain. The hero sees it as, I'm not going to let anybody go through what I went through. Like, I'm going to do something with this. The villain sees it as, I'm going to tear everybody down and make them feel what I feel. But both equally, the hero and the villain they equally have, like, subjectively, you know, the same amount of pain. It's just all the internal response is what creates the difference. It's like, and I see heroes and villains as the comparison as today is like a victim or a creator, like, period, end of story. Everybody's been through pain. It doesn't matter who or what your background is. Like, no one's better. No pain is any more or less significant. It is from an objective standpoint, but in reality, like, it's all based on how the individual is processing it. That's what it all comes down to. It's like, what are you going to do with this? Some people use it as a story of like, well, I am this way because my father beat me, or it's, I am this way because my father beat me. In a positive sense, like, mm-hmm. I made the choice, I'm never going to be like that. Or the other guy says, well, that's all I ever knew, so of course I'm like that. It's the same story, different perception.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's like my mom's experience, was like, she had an abusive father, and then mm-hmm. it was like she raised me to be everything that he was not, which turned me into somewhat of a nice guy, which I know we'll get into later.
That's very typical of mothers, man.
Yeah, but
very
but
typical.
You know, providing that example where it's like, you know, she could have continued, perpetuated that cycle of abuse, or, you know, what she did was break that. So I think everyone has that ability, that free will to choose.
And 100%.
It's just about the stories, like you're saying, the stories we tell ourselves. It's like, if we're going to believe that we're the victim, we're the victim. But
exactly.
You know, what do you think goes into, you know, someone's ability? Because it seems like it's not a binary, you know, you're either the hero or you're the victim, where it's like you could start off the victim and then get empowered and become the hero. Mm-hmm. Like, what do you think goes into people's responses and whether which camp they end up ultimately kind of falling into?
Well, that's a great question. I think there's a layer of grace in that. Like, for me, for example, you know, I can only speak to my experience and then observing of others. For a long time, I was a victim to my pain. If I rewind the clock, I wouldn't have been saying it like I am today. But as I've grown, I've realized, holy shit, I was actually a victim. You know, I went through some pretty intense abuse, physically, mentally, spiritually. And for so long, like, I felt imprisoned by those experiences. Like, they always kept me at a threshold of not stepping into the greatest Anton, because like, I thought something was wrong with me based off how those people made me feel. And the story was that like, yeah, there's something's wrong with me because of what they did to me. But as I grew and processed that trauma, I realized the exact opposite. I went into like, this is my personal beliefs, and maybe this is just what I say to make myself be able to process the experience. But I truly believe that God, universe, whatever you believe in, put me in that hard, fucked up position as a young boy, not necessarily to cause me pain, but the pain, but really to cause me growth. But the pain was just a catalyst to push me towards growth because I needed that. If it was so easy, why would anyone ever grow? That's the beauty of pain. It's like it pushes us, you know, to hopefully to a level where we have to get better to overcome it. And that was me, man. And then as I really started to process it, I realized, holy shit, that wasn't victim. That wasn't God singling me out. That was God giving me a gift. Like truly, like that was God actually setting me up to become the greatest me ever. And dude, when you have that like understanding, not just in your head, but in your nervous system, it changes your whole life. Because you walk around with such a deep level of faith that like nothing can really ever steer you off like your essence. Nothing can steal it from you. And when you tap into that, you like really, you take all your power back. And that's been a repeating theme of my life, learning how to take my power back and just continue to be pushed towards like my highest evolution for sure.
So in terms of that, like self-belief or that belief that what you were going through, what the universe was putting you through, no matter how hard, you know, it was for a purpose, that there was some reason behind your suffering.
Yes.
What led to you having that epiphany? Like, was it from your own life experiences? Was it a conversation that you had with someone, mentors? How did you get from a place of victimhood to that empowered stage?
Yeah, well, there was many moments of grace in my life. Like, that's really all I could say. Like, none of that understanding I just explained came from another human. Like, yeah, I know people talk about it, but my understanding of it was very literal with the universe or God or whatever you want to talk like say. But it was at like the very first palpable experience of what I just explained about how like my pain was a gift was actually during like a very deep meditative type thing I was doing. I was in an altered state. I was like going through different traumas in my mind and revisiting them and doing all these like weird things. And essentially I came to this point where in the meditation, my awareness of the experience went from being in it, like reliving it, to like creating this gap of like, oh, that's not me, I'm witnessing that. So I became like a watcher. And dude, I just like had this awareness of like, what's God's perspective of this moment? Not Anton's, what's God's? And just that question like brought me so much healing. Like I can't even like put it into words. And I was crying, I was laughing, and I was like, holy shit, I was set up. For so long, the very thing I thought held me back was my greatest gift. And it's like that every time. Like I've been cheated on by multiple girlfriends. In the moment, it's horrible. In the moment, you want to cry. You don't know what to do. Sometimes like you feel like there's like you form these beliefs like, oh, they'll never be a, you know, a good girl or whatever. And then you grow, and then you look back at that moment, you're like, holy shit, I'm grateful as hell that happened because I wasn't a full man. Mm-hmm. You know, I was only half of a man. So I have like all these moments in my life now where anytime things are going wrong, like that's my default. Like, all right, this is teaching me something. This is redirecting me, or this is giving me an experience that I can maybe help someone else with one day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, and I really appreciate just like, you know, witnessing at the event, just your brutal honesty, like in talking about girlfriends cheating on you. Like it's something I think a lot of people would like hold back on. But you're like, no, like this is what happened. Here's what I learned from it. It's the truth.
And it's easier to just live the truth, man.
Yeah.
I've tried to like fabricate certain things to like respect people's identities, which I still do. But then like I got to own my own truth as well. And that's been part of my process of breaking the nice guy syndrome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, when I think back like on my life, you know, right after college, a couple of years after college, you know, I was in a relationship or kind of getting into a relationship with a girl and then ended up having shoulder surgery. And then that same week, you know, I had like 5 incisions all over and she left me like that.
Dude, it was brutal.
It was brutal. It was like savage. It was terrible.
First one moment, hurts.
Like the most amount of like physical and emotional pain. And like, from what we know about neuroscience, it's like those are both working on the brain in the same regard. Those are both stressing the same receptors. So it's like, and in the moment I was like thinking like, if I can get through this, I'm going to be able to get through anything in life.
That's awesome.
And you know, coming out of it the other side, it did really develop that self-belief and realizing, like, you know, no matter what gets thrown at me, that I'm going to be able to dig down deep and figure out a way to overcome this. So
like beautiful.
What you're saying, you know, I don't know how I would have had those realizations. I wouldn't have had them from reading a book. It wouldn't have been from hearing someone's story. It was going through it. Sounds like it was for you too.
Similar. I think it's I really believe that every man is on like the typical, like, Joseph Campbell's hero's journey. Like, I really believe that. And I believe that that is like the almost like blueprint or archetype of our soul. Like, something instinctively inside of us knows, like, no problem is too big for the soul. Like, something just in us knows that. I feel like kids even have that wisdom. So it's like, and when I said grace earlier, that's kind of what I'm alluding to. It's like, it's beyond mind. It's beyond logic. It's like something more, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How do you think, like, is it possible, you know, is your role in someone's coach or leading these events for people who've been through a lot of pain, a lot of hardship in their life, but they're still in that role of a victim, playing the victim, is it something that they have to simply experience enough pain to the point where they're like, man, you know what, I gotta make this shift internally? Or is it something that you can help catalyze, you think, from the work you do?
Oh, absolutely. You can absolutely help catalyze it. People are really driven by one or two things: to get out of pain or get into pleasure. That's really it. And if I'm looking at somebody and they're having an issue and they're telling me they want a solution, I know one or two things. They need to either have so much pain in this moment to realize something's got to change, otherwise they're going to keep winding up the same scenario, or kind of like what I alluded to earlier, they need a vision of their future that's going to be pleasurable. Like I said, if you have a positive today, tomorrow, any hardship from today can be grown through. So I do, you know, I've worked with some of the greatest teachers and coaches in the world. I've been able to model and study with them. So I have like a lot of mirror neurons in my head from a lot of my teachers. So sometimes the answers just kind of pour through me, and I trust my intuition in those moments to like not let my logic be the guiding force here, but let my subconscious, like a greater intelligence that is inside of me and connected to something greater, to guide what I need to do in this moment to serve this person. Because that's really all my intention is. Like, I want to help this person. And as you saw at the event, like, I never use the same approach on anybody. It's always radically different. And that's because I'm basing my approach based off the individual in front of me. So, you know, when I'm working with somebody and, like, let's say they're a nice guy, I know for me, I need to show up more aggressive, because that's going to push against their programming of what maybe their role model of a masculine man is. So if I can show them that I'm kind, but you can't fuck with me type aggression, they're going to be like, that's new for them. So I'm going to use that to like influence them in a positive direction. And I really base that a lot, like my approaches, I'm basing it a lot off of like archetypes. I'm looking at, like, you know, what would a king do in this moment? What would a warrior do? What would a lover do? What would a magician do? And I'm really, really sensitive in those moments to the energy of the individual in front of me, and just seeing, all right, I'm looking at their body language, I'm looking at how they're responding, I'm looking at their IQs, I'm looking at everything, and their body tells me if it's true or not. It's like your nervous system, just, you can see it in them. Their shoulders will drop, or, you know, they'll have this there'll be something that latches on in their nervous system, and I'm like, oop, I know I'm onto something, because it doesn't always work. I switch it up a lot. Like, I'm just trying to feel where they're at, where are they responding. And then once I see I got something according to what their body's telling me, I just double down. Yeah. It's pretty cool. It looks like magic, but it's really not.
Yeah. It's like that super developed intuition, I guess, on your part in terms of reading people. But I'm assuming that probably comes from reading yourself and getting really honest with yourself.
That's part of it for sure. You can only take people as far as you've gone.
Right. Right. And no, I mean, that's definitely, I appreciate your approach in that sense of, like, clearly you've done a lot of inner work yourself and, like, working with some of the top people in the personal growth space. I wanted to ask you about, you know, what, because obviously we've talked about, you know, what we can learn through our own personal experiences, and that's obviously quite a lot.
Yeah.
But there's also obviously a lot of wisdom, you know, in people who are masters. And I want to hear, you know, just working with some of the top people, We don't necessarily need to name drop, but we definitely could.
Yeah, you can. Yeah. I mean, if there's a specific one you want to talk about, I'm happy to share what I learned from them. Because I've worked with many different types of masters, and they all come in different forms, but they all have a similar kind of outcome of, like, greater growth in whatever category. Hmm. But there's a lot. There's a golden thread, I found.
Okay. Yeah, maybe you could, you know, touch on a couple that you found. Like, what were some of the biggest takeaways or things that you feel like you learned from some of these people that really helped you grow in your life?
Man. It's really hard to imagine my life without my teachers. Like, not to pedestalize them or anything like that. I don't do that at all. Like, like, zero. What's it called when you're, like, intermediating the audience from the crowd or from the teachers? What's that person called? A mediator. Yeah, yeah. I'm like being a emceeing. That's what I'm looking for. I'm emceeing an event for real life gurus next weekend in California, and it's like these are, like, legit gurus. They do, like, 50,000 person events in India. Like no advertisement, just, like, show up. It's just crazy. Like, they're very, like, real gurus. And although they're wise and all they're beautiful people, although I love them, I will not put them on a pedestal. And that's because I know the opposite of that, what happens when you do put people on pedestals. And it's just human nature, man. Unfortunately, there's a dark side to human nature, and I've experienced it many times. I learned my lesson. But yeah, I just want to, like, give some context to that, because I don't want people to see, like, oh, like, you know, I'm just not into giving my power away. But I will say, we need each other, whether it's a teacher, whether it's another human, we do need each other. So in terms of my teachers, man, like I said, I wouldn't be who I am without them. And I mean, they've all taught me different things. I think the biggest thing for me was just an expansion of what I thought was possible on this plane of existence. I actually knew at the age of 16 that I was going to be a teacher one day. My first teacher was Bob Proctor. And when I saw him, there was just something, like, in me that said, I'm going to do that one day. I don't know what it was. It was just, I don't know if it was a desire or a wish or an intuition, but there was something. And as I grew my business and started working with all these different teachers, I just was starstruck, really, when I started to see my teachers get on a stage with 5,000 people, 10,000 people, you know, 100,000 people, and all of their lives are changed in the crowd. I was like, when I experienced that, I was like, that is just beyond what I could ever comprehend, like, see myself doing. But after experiencing it literally so many times, I just was like, man, these people are agents of change. And that just really inspired me. Like, I'm not into schooling at all, but I love education. And that's what I think personal development provides people. Like, a good teacher, man, like, there's nothing better in life, honestly. They can shortcut your process. They're like a coach. They can tell you the hard things, you know, maybe your father or whoever never was able to tell you, or maybe your mother or whoever it is. We all have these people in our life that leave a huge impact. But for me, man, just, like, you know, there's so many lessons, but really, I think if I had to sum it up, it's just, like, pushing the envelope on what's possible as a human, like, and what's possible when, like, there's a person that really has a desire to serve. It's so beautiful. It really is.
And back to your point about not wanting to be put on this pedestal, you know, I know one of the stories you shared at the event was talking about, I think, a client of yours you were coaching who, you know, kind of told you that you were the reason he didn't commit suicide. And you're like, no, like, you made that choice yourself.
Yes.
Don't give that power away to me.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was, like, a really unique thing, like, where a lot of people, like, is that something you've witnessed with, because I would assume, you know, within the personal growth space where people make it super big, even though it's a lot about talking about the ego's all bad. But, like, naturally, you know, you become famous, you get millions of dollars, you've got to develop somewhat of an ego. Like, you know,
Yeah.
So what's been that experience like of, you know, maybe seeing some of these people blow up, or, you know, did they ever, like, not really seem to be who they appeared at first, or...
almost all of them, unfortunately. I tell people now that separate the teacher from the teachings. Because if you don't, you will be let down.
So you think even if, but what about like someone who's like talking the talk, but they're not walking the walk themselves? Like you think you can still trust that teaching, even if they're not like embodying that, what they're saying necessarily?
I think people usually teach what they need the most. So I think wisdom can be felt, and they may have an understanding of it, and they do at some level, but I think a lot of them can be hypocritical, man. It's a big freaking paradox. Like, it's mind fucked me more times than I can even begin to say. Not to like put down anybody. I will say there are legit teachers who it's rare, you know, it is rare to have somebody be on the stage and like share a message and then get off the stage and still hold that demeanor and like really walk it. It's not an act. It's who they are. It's rare. I've seen it, but it's more common to see the opposite, unfortunately.
You want to name some of the names?
No, just kidding. That I have seen?
No.
I'll say for sure, dude, like Tony Robbins is as legit as they come. He is just off the stage. He's almost more incredible than he is on the stage. And I think those words coming out of my mouth hold a lot of weight, being my past experience, as you know. And like, I always give credit where credit's due. Like, that man is incredible. He really, really is. And it's not even his teachings that are so good. It's who he is. He really embodies it.
It seems like something, you know, tricky kind of in your position, or people like you, you know, where it's like, people are coming to you to seek answers to all these things. And it's like, you obviously do have quite a lot of answers, you know, but you're also someone who's like admitting, I don't have all the answers, right? Where it's like, I feel like in leadership, you know, it seems like people need to see the leader possess a certain level of confidence to follow them, right?
100%.
But then it's like, is that to a fault, to a point where it's like, they're telling you answers that they don't necessarily have, you know, figured out themselves?
I think it's important to stay in your lane, for sure. I think I was going down that path of being a lot like my teachers, and that's funny because that was also my biggest fear. And I started to see myself become like that, and I had to have a long, hard heart-to-heart with myself and get really fucking honest, because I realized I was saying things that weren't rooted in my understanding, but through my teacher's understanding, that sounded good, that I could say it like them, but I wasn't walking that path. And that was actually like literally like about a year ago that started to happen to me. And I really started to like actually hate myself, because I felt like I was creating something that wasn't real. So I was like, I need to change all of this. So I actually changed. And your guys' event that we did here a couple months ago was really Anton, you know, it wasn't anything else but Anton. And that for me was really, it's really important and significant, because dude, it's easy, man. It's easy to get lost in that. And I'm small, I'm like nothing in this industry, but dude, like you said, some of my clients tell me I'm the reason they're still on this planet. And it's just like, yeah, that might sound good to my ego, but I really don't try to hear that, because it's not true. Like, it's not actually true. They might have that perception, but dude, like, their fingers on the trigger. Like, I'm not pulling it or not pulling it. Like, it's, that is a choice they're making. Yes, I can influence them. Yes, I can shine a light. But I think as a human, to bear that responsibility is too much for anybody. And I don't want to take that route, because that's not who I am. I am so flawed. That's why I swear in real life, I'm going to swear in interviews, I'm going to swear on stage, I'm not going to dumb down or over amplify anything other than I am. And when I started doing that, dude, like, fuck, man, it just feels good. You don't have to be something.
And I think it builds trust. You know, it's like, I trust you more, yeah, like admitting like, you know, I don't have all the answers, or I, this is the way I messed up this situation.
Because it's like, oh, and I got countless stories, man.
No, but I mean, that's like a very admirable thing to be vulnerable in that sense, because I think it really does connect a lot of people to that story.
Yeah.
Rather, and maybe prevent them from, you know, putting you on some pedestal that isn't necessarily accurate.
I really hope so, man. Like, I really do. And I think that's like what I look at, like Marcus Aurelius. I don't know if you know much about him, but he has a book. Well, it wasn't technically supposed to be a book, but I mean, this is like the greatest empire we know of in history. One of the greatest. And dude, he had such like a, like he really walked his talk, and he even in his journal, like he even really talks about how there was conflicting things within him, you know, because he was a king. He was like a real king, but he also was a human. And he, like, through his writings, you can so feel his, like, sincerity to be the best him. And I really think that's all we can do. Like, I don't want to shun anybody I've worked with or anybody in the industry. Like, that's not what I'm here to do. It's easy to do that because there is a layer of truth in that. But all my teachers, all these people, anybody in that industry, I believe, like, in my heart of hearts, that, like, they're in it because they want to serve. And they do serve. Like, and that's where it's like the mind fuck, where it's like, this person is helping millions of people all across the world, yet they're a fucking asshole. But they're helping millions of people all across the world. Like, lives are changing. So it's like, you know, I feel like sometimes that's, you know, as a kid, they say, as a kid, you understand the hero and you love the hero. But as an adult, like, you really understand the villain. Like, you really do. You get it. Because you've also been through pain. So it's like, you know, it's a weird paradox. But yeah, I just try to be as real as possible, man, and just work on myself harder than anything else. And I know if I do that, I'll always serve at the highest level, but I also like I'll keep my soul. I think that's what I'm more concerned about, not losing myself in the process.
Right. Mm-hmm. And definitely it seems like an area you've stepped into heavy lately is that masculine feminine dynamic. Like, I'd love to talk about that and, you know, just get some of your views on there. Cause I know a lot of the stuff you shared at the event, I was like, just like, it definitely correlated with my own views. And like, when you're describing your previous self and those nice guys sort of tendencies, I was just in my chair, just, oh, like, just felt,
I know this all too,
like,
well.
Yeah. Oh, man, just thinking back, like, ugh, what I used to be. But, you know, I'm curious, like, what do you see kind of going on in the landscape between men and women now that you think needs to change? I know there's probably a lot, but
the simple answer is that men are being taught to be like women, and society is fueling that thought. And women are being taught to be like men, and society is supporting that thought. I think that's the summary. I think that is incredibly destructive. Very much so. I don't think we feel it yet. Give it 10 years. Give it 20 years. Because, dude, I see this stuff, man. Like when I'm sharing stuff like this on social media, people think I'm just talking out of my ass. It's like, yo, you don't understand. Over the past 4 years of my life, I've worked with tens of thousands of people virtually on this, and in person, not that many, but hundreds in person, thousands, tens of thousands virtually. I've interacted one-on-one with so many high-achieving women, so many, and so many feminine, nice guy guys. And they both desire exactly what I speak to. So I know there's a layer of truth in it. And all you have to do, man, is study history. Like, strong times, or what is it? Hard times create strong people. Strong people create good times. Good times create weak people. Weak people create hard times. That's really the summary of history, man. And we are at that point right now where good times have created weak people. So men specifically, and women, are falling, like, men more so, I'm not afraid to say that, men more so are being demonized to not be able to be men, that there's something wrong with being strong, there's something wrong with being confident, and that's toxically masculine. Dude, it's a joke, man. It really, really is. And I think as men aren't, like, as men break through the shell of like not being afraid to speak on this stuff, the world's going to start to change, because like we talked about earlier, there's an instinctual understanding inside of every man that understands these words to be the truth. And it's like, dude, you can't hide the truth for that long. It's just nature, man. Like, and same with women. When I work with these high achieving women, they have millions of dollars, some of them, but really all they want is a good man. All they want is a family. All they want is a daughter. And when I see that they're getting 40, 50, dude, that possibility's gone. And I've worked with women in their 50s. I've worked with many women in their 40s, and it's too late. And they're high achievers. They're successful in business, but dude, they're sad and depressed. Yeah, there's still options. You know, you can adopt these things, but I think it's just better if we fix the root of the problem and we just own up to the fact that we are biologically different. And that should be celebrated and not demonized. Like, that's just, I have such a strong opinion on it because I got fed the lie and I believed it.
Same.
And what did it lead to? Pain
and misery.
Exactly. <Yeah. laughs> Every single time. And men are lucky because we go through it younger. Hmm. So we can adjust quicker. Women don't, bro. They start realizing this in their late 30s, mid 30s. It's different for men, man. Most men start to realize this in their late 20s. Well, we're not even in our prime until our 30s, 40s. It's a little different for women. So we have an upper hand in that battle, but it's important that we speak up because, like, the whole feminism movement, they don't realize what they're doing. They're literally destroying the thing they're trying to help by making feminine energy seem like it should be masculine. How does that make any sense? It makes no sense, which is why there's all these problems, man. And it's not the women's fault. It's actually the men's fault. And we have to take responsibility for that. Because as kings, as sovereign beings, women are sovereign as well, but as that fatherly energy, dude, the father is the one that influences the household, or the masculine energy, I should say. Because women can have more, like sometimes it is the woman who embodies more of a masculine energy that has that fatherly approach where they can have those hard conversations. They can be raw and honest. They can tell you what you need to hear, not what you want to hear. That's what a father does. And he knows, or they know, that they might lose your love, but that's okay because they're giving you the lesson. And I think like more men need to just own that shit, dude, and own it unapologetically and get loud about it and talk to your friends about it and share about it. Because dude, like, this is why figures like Andrew Tate and these other masculine figures are blowing up. And that has a problem in itself too, because the figure of a divine masculine, so to say, is very skewed, man. It's more of like, you know, it's more of like a big brother instead of a father. And that's okay. But there needs to be an evolution in that consciousness as well, from what I'm observing and seeing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I know, you know, something on a biological level that, you know, might be a big driver of this is, you know, men's testosterone levels plummeting over the past few decades. But what other factors do you think like have led to this shift in, you know, and you talk about sort of the lack of polarity where it's like both genders kind of moving towards more neutral. Like, and you mentioned just before that you feel like it's men's fault that it's driving this. Like, what do you blame? Like, why is this happening?
There's so many factors, man. So it starts off usually, there's many scenarios. I walk you through a few of them. One is you have an overbearing father. This was kind of my scenario. My father was very powerful, very dominant, very aggressive, very intense, also incredibly loving, I will say. But as a young boy who is also extremely empathic, I'm sensitive to energy, my dad's overbearingness almost made me like not be able to develop into a man, but like always be the scared child because it was too much. It's just too much. So I shut down. And again, this is an individualistic thing. Everyone's nervous system's a little bit different. Some people's core response when they're under stress is fight. Others is freeze. That was mine. And, you know, or run. Like, there's a lot of different responses. So it's based off the individual, but the father and the mother place are, and when I say father and mother, just the masculine and feminine energy role models in your life as a young boy, or girl. On the other hand, the mothers had a bad experience with masculine energy with the father, so they project on their child to never be like their dad because he's too wild or he's too mean or he's too nice even sometimes. It's all these cues. So if the father was too mean and you shouldn't be like your father, the mom projects that onto the kid. So the guy becomes a nice guy because his version of masculinity says what his father is doing is wrong. And that's a dangerous road to go down because it's through the lens of his mom, but his mom's a girl. It's different energy. So this is kind of what my mom started to do as I got older. Thankfully, I was older, so I could kind of decipher if this was really the truth. And that's really, it starts in the household, man. It really, really does. That's part one of the problem. Part two of the problem is society at large. Hollywood, music, you know, there's like masculinity that promotes almost like an abuse of the feminine through rap and these different things. There's Hollywood movies that make it seem like men should bend ass backwards every little way towards their wife, when really it's the complete opposite. Men should be able to hold a core center so strong that they drive the direction of the relationship. Doesn't mean the feminine isn't important, but the man is the driver. I look at the feminine as like the oracle, the advisor, to see beyond the physical realm, to tap into the spiritual, and that's where the feminine really thrives. And that's equally as important. It's just a different role. And that's where society goes wrong. They think like, when I say that, I'm saying women are not good or they're not as important. No, no, no. They're just as important, just in a different way. And that's where I think people are confused. Men are trying to become like women. Society is pushing that agenda. And women are trying to become like man. Again, because society is saying, this is important. This is what a woman is. A boss bitch. A this, this, that thing. You don't need no man. Like all these programmings, dude. And these girls hear this at a young age through influencers or their mother that they look up to. So they're receptive to that information. And they grow up and they're 35 and they're miserable because they bought the pill. They took it in, and that was me. It was like, I believed men should be gentlemen, like gentle man, like no aggression. And of course, you don't want to be aggressive, but if you don't have the aggression built up inside of you in a healthy way, guess what? It's going to come out in an unconscious way eventually. And dude, there were so many times where my whole life, I never got angry. Like I never got angry. I always got sad. Like that was my dominant, like the freeze kind of response. It was like a closed, depressed. As I started getting older, there was like that aggression was never expressed. And I'd like blow up on a girlfriend out of nowhere. Like crazy shit, dude, where I'm like, where did that come from? Like, holy shit, I'm being like my dad. Yeah, you're being like your dad because you've neglected that shadow your whole fucking life. So now it's coming to get you. So you either run from it and it comes out in unconscious ways, or you integrate that shadow to become a healthy masculine figure, which is why like I am so big into martial arts. I'm so big into fighting in a you know, a closed format, so that you can express that aggression, because nice guys have no idea how to set a boundary and enforce it. Nice guys have no idea how to say no. Nice guys have no idea how to take control of a woman if they want to, like in a sexual way. I know it sounds funny, but women need to feel that from you. Otherwise, they're not going to feel safe, because they're going to tell you, I don't want you to be that way. But women don't mean what they say. They're emotional creatures. They want to actually feel that safety. And you felt that. Your girl felt that. The whole room felt that at the event when I gave a real life example. So I know it's a long answer to a question, but there's a lot of like subcategories here, and I'm happy to dive deeper into all of them as well.
Yeah. No, a lot of different paths we could take this down. Yeah. But, you know, it really got me thinking, like, you know, I grew up kind of without a father figure. And then I noticed, you know, going through childhood and into my teenage years, that like coaches, you know, like my basketball team, like coaches who were strong authority figures would like scare the shit out of me.
And that's very normal.
It was something that I didn't want to admit that I was scared. Yes. I tried to like mask it.
Yes.
But my nervous system was just so on overdrive and so triggered by that.
Yep.
Yeah. And I was just wondering, you know, how that sort of those, all of those experiences kind of set our subconscious, unconscious programming. Mm-hmm. And what do you think people can do about that to, you know, actually rewire their nervous system and change, you know, kind of as they progress through, you know, into adulthood? Because for me, I feel like it was very much pain, you know, like what we've talked about, seeing and just having so much lack of success with girls.
Yeah.
Where it was just realizing, okay, you know, this nice guy Hollywood bullshit
doesn't work. It doesn't work.
I wish it did.
I wish it did too. Easy, but, dude, I don't. Yeah.
Yeah. But like, what can people that kind of have gotten to that realization, but maybe they're still, you know, recovering nice guys as that realize they have those tendencies, but are looking to break out. I know obviously jujitsu and martial arts being a great one, but what other strategies or things can guys implement?
I think first and foremost is that you need brothers in your life. It doesn't mean blood. It means real fucking friends, like masculine men, or at least men who are striving to become the best versions of them, and surround yourself with them, get as close as possible as you can to them. Seek out a coach, a good coach though. There's so many bullshit coaches. And also study what it's like. Like, I study the archetypes, and as a man, for me as a man, love my dad dearly. But I wouldn't say he's the masculine figure like I look up to. He's not necessarily my guide anymore. I had to look beyond what he could give me, which is okay. He's on his own path too. And I love my father. I have nothing. I wouldn't be who I am without him. But as a man, you can study story. You can study mythology and look into a deeper understanding of the male psyche as a whole, which is what I've done and spent the last year really kind of like a maniac going into. Because I was looking for those answers because of pain. I thought, like, when you give a girl that you love and you think you're going to marry, you give her everything. That's what men do. Men, the masculine energy wants to serve. It's a selfless energy. It really is. A true divine masculine man has a desire to serve his queen, to serve his community, to serve his mission. And when you're so encompassing with that energy, and then it's taken advantage of, or what feels like being taken advantage of, like, you're like, yo, I've given you everything. How could you do an act like that? How could you cheat? Or how could you leave? Or how could you this? Or how could you that? And then it happens again. And then again. And you're like, all right, maybe it's me. That's the fucking problem here. So that's what happened to me, where I was like, I got to look at me. I got to look in the mirror. And that's when I started to learn about the polarity of the masculine frame. There's dark and light. And most men have no idea what that is. The light guys are like the typical nice guys. They're usually overly spiritual or very spiritual, but they have no fucking backbone. They're soft. They're super fucking soft, and they will get destroyed by a typically masculine man. And toxic masculinity, think Andrew Tate, he is dark masculine. And there's nothing wrong with dark. It's not bad. It's just that aggressive. It's that kind of selfish side. It's that Tyler Durden Fight Club energy of like, yo, I'm gonna live life on my fucking terms. I don't care if the world burns down. It's process. I'm the shit. Everybody needs that as a man, some level. Overly on that end, you're getting into toxic masculinity. That's the criminal. That's the abuser. That's the rapist. But overly light, that's the pleaser. That's the guy that gets kicked around. That's the guy that, you know, raises kids who are just as soft as him. That's they equally fuck up society equally. So the goal is, okay, how do we integrate these two sides so that we can become wholesome? And there's a lot of ways. Like I said, get around powerful men, join jujitsu, get in a gym, learn how to talk to women, go on dates, put yourself out there. Like, if you want to become a man fast, go on as many dates as possible. Start cold approaching women. Talk to women. Dude, the gift of the feminine is it shows men where they're weak. It just amplifies it. They will hit you in any spot, and that's the gift. Some men don't like that challenge, but if you're truly masculine, you'll embrace that, because that's the gift the feminine gives you. It's like this big mirror. This is where you lack. This is where you're limited. So yeah, that's a way to fuel that process and be a huge catalyst to make it go quicker.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I feel like you really can't bullshit with women. No. Because it's like they pick up on that.
It's the feminine, bro.
Energy cues, you know, or
that's like, the feminine. They see beyond the physical.
Yeah,
yeah.
And it was something like growing up, you know, I had a lot of social anxiety, and I would try to hide that, and I thought I was doing a somewhat good job of that until it came to my interactions with girls, where I was like, no, they could totally feel my anxiety. 100%. Then I could see that they were getting anxious because they were feeding off of that, and then I was like, you know, obviously not getting great results. So
nope.
You know, just that, I think that's like such a helpful feedback system, but
it is. Most men are scared to go there though.
Yeah. Well, it's not a pleasant, cause it's like shining. It's like putting this like mirror right up to your face and saying like, hey, take a look at who you are.
Yep. It's very confronting and nice guys hate confrontation. So they run from this shit, but and nice guys are masculine. They've just become a little emasculated. Like they've just kind of forgotten who they really are. So they need to kind of wake up that wild boy, as we refer to in the book Iron John. But that kind of that primal, aggressive, crazy boy, he's not harmful. Like he's perceived as harmful, but he's part of every man. So nice guys, like when I'm coaching them, and a lot of people look at my Instagram and they get, if they're not a nice guy, they get confused. Because I am speaking to the nice guy. I'm not speaking to the guy that already like is great with women and is in a happy, committed relationship. Maybe I am if he's also a nice guy. But if he's like kind of more on the dark side and he is more of like a toxically masculine man, he's not going to resonate with my stuff.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, he's not going to resonate with it. But the nice guys, who is primarily who I work with, they're like, holy fuck, this guy's confronting his shit. And I'm intentionally doing that because that was me. I needed somebody to be like, dude, you're wrong. Here's why. And use my pains to kind of validate their points of like, well, if you're right, then why do you keep going through all these hard relationship things? Why does this keep happening in business? Why do men keep taking advantage of you? Why does this happen? Why does that happen? Why do women keep taking advantage of you? And I was like, fuck, it's me. So I had to swallow that pill, and it changed my whole life, man. It's kind of like another side of like not being a victim. It's like, all right, I need to take responsibility for this. Everything. Like when people ask me like, you know, why did she cheat on you, or why do all these girls, I'm like, it's my fucking fault. She did it because of me. Because of how I was showing up, who I was being, how I couldn't own her in the way she needed me to. So the female kind of psyche, the female heart, they crave a strong man. And if you're super nice and you have no backbone, you will absolutely struggle with women. You will not struggle being friends with them, but you will struggle being intimate with them. And those guys get friend zoned a lot. And the women, when they break up with them, they're like, God, you're gonna find such a good girl one day. They say shit like this. And that's because what they're saying is, you're a beautiful man, but you can never own me in a sexual way because you have no aggression inside of you, or you can never protect me if shit really hit the fan, or you're not enough of a provider to succeed, so I can't trust your energy. So it runs really deep, man. And when men start to understand this, like the beautiful thing that's so misunderstood about the masculine is how much he truly wants to serve and get better. Like I try to make this so clear to women, and I love my engagements with women is because I get to see a side most men don't see, because I'm coaching them and I want nothing from them and they know that. So I get to see like a more authentic side. I think a lot of men don't always get to see right away. So I see that beautiful, and I get to plant that seed with them. Like, look, like men love way differently than women. And when a woman can start to grasp how willing her man is to get better and grow, man, it sets the tone for such a beautiful relationship. It really, really does. And I'm blessed I get to see like the best sides of humanity with what I do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I want to credit you for helping kind of break a false belief that I think I didn't even realize I was sort of carrying around maybe up until the event a couple months ago. Oh, wow.
What was it?
Well, that aggression is
bad.
Something, yeah, is bad, or that most women are going to be afraid of that.
Afraid of it, yeah.
And because I was like taught, you know, I was taught growing up, like, don't be like, you know, my mom.
Don't be like your dad.
Don't be like, you know, my grandpa.
Your grandpa, right? Yeah.
So, and like, but then seeing like all of the, not just my girlfriend, but like all the girls, like all the women at the event, their reaction, you know, to the men wrestling, it was like unanimously like super positive, attracted. And it was like something that you said that really connected with me was like that they feel safe, that they yes. feel like if shit hit the fan, if someone was to come in that room with a gun or something, that the guys would actually do something to defend them.
Exactly. And that's where when women see, this is what I, and this is no disrespect towards women, but women don't actually mean what they say. If you're dating a woman for 10 years and she loves you dearly, and in one moment she's going, I hate you, I hate your guts, I hate your, I hate everything about you. She doesn't actually mean that. Just in the very moment, the energy she feels is hateful, but it doesn't mean she doesn't love you. See, it's very different than a man. A man, if he's saying, I hate you, he fucking means it. Like, he's not just throwing that shit around. Like, he really means that in the moment. But men and women have to realize we're so different. So for everybody listening, to give you context on kind of what happened, I kind of spur of a moment decided that I wanted everybody to wrestle because, again, I work with a lot of nice guys. A lot of like typical nice guys come to my events and they need that aggression and they need a safe container for it. And I never had done this around girls before, so it was interesting to have both genders in the room. But it posed the perfect point, because if you ask a woman, do you want your man to be a fighter? She's going to say, no, of course not. Yeah, until some shit hits the fan and he needs to protect you. See, they don't mean what they say. So when the man goes and we wrestled, all of us, we just wrestled and there's no structure, we just went for it. The women were actually scared watching that, like, holy shit, but they knew they were safe. And then it translated to, holy shit, these guys could protect me if they needed to. And that tells their nervous system, these men are safe. But society will say that's toxic. See where it's so confusing, because women don't actually realize what they're doing by really amplifying the message of like toxic masculinity. No. You want a little bit of toxic masculinity in terms of society standards, because that's the very energy that's going to protect you when it needs to be there. When shit hits the fan, if a man is super soft, he's going to run. He's going to throw you in front of the way of the bullet or the knife because he's a bitch. He's scared. He's weak. That's not a strong man. That's a weak man. So a strong man has the capability of anger and aggression and protection and strength and the ability to dominate if needed to protect you and him and maybe your kids. And to not have that energy developed as a whole is a bad place to be. A strong man has that energy, but it's controlled. That's the difference. It's not out of control. He's fully in control. That's why I love martial arts. And that's why specifically why I love jiu-jitsu. You don't have to hurt somebody to beat them. You can get on their back and choke them and they're done. Nobody was hurt. You lay them down and you go. MMA or boxing is a little different. So it's like really a true form of what like strength really is. It's the capacity for danger, but just the capacity. You just got to be capable. And that's it. And if you need it, great. You know, you'd rather have a warrior in a garden than a gardener in a war. It's like, that's a classic quote. And it's like, yeah, that's the truth. I agree with that fully. And I've seen it to be real in my life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the point I wanted to make, just mind's going blank here.
No, that's okay.
Edit this part out. it's going somewhere good with this. Oh, yeah, I wanted to ask you about like one thing about masculinity that I feel like, you know, a lot of men are, you know, being encouraged to embrace their emotions. And like we obviously talked at the beginning about vulnerability and like the positives, the pros of being vulnerable, that it, you know, shows this element of truth and connects people. But then it can also be taken too far and you can, as a man, become kind of like a bitch.
Yep, so, totally.
So how do you feel like, how can guys find that middle ground? Because I feel like it's so much the the two opposites, the two extremes, which is like either this toxic masculinity or super feminine, super nice guy.
Yeah.
In terms of being vulnerable and like dealing with our emotions, expressing our emotions, how can guys kind of find a middle ground?
Yeah. Integrating of both sides is really the key to what a true man is, in my opinions. In terms of vulnerability, like when a woman says she wants you to be more vulnerable, what she means is she wants you to have the capacity to be able to communicate clearly what you're actually feeling, because that gives her the sense that you have it under control. What she doesn't want is to give you solutions to your problems. Women don't want to do that. And where nice guys go wrong is they think they need to be totally unfiltered, honest all the time, 100% real, everything they're feeling, they express. And those women always leave for a more alpha masculine man every single time, every single day of the week. Or if they stay, there's no passion in the relationship and it becomes very neutralized where it's just, they're just good friends. And, you know, that happens so, so many times. But again, if you're overly dark, and we talked a little bit about that polarity, those men do need to learn how to soften a little bit, because every single man has a lover inside of him. Those toxically dark masculine men, that's a warrior. A warrior is numb to their emotions. They're a warrior. They can't be emotional. They have a battle to fight. But anybody who's stuck in that archetype 24/7 is going to have problems elsewhere. They're going to fall into shallowness, because a woman does want a layer of depth. That's why spiritual men usually have no problem getting the girl. They have a problem keeping her. That's usually the issue, because they've fallen too deep into the open-heartedness, vulnerability. And then in the back of her head, she's going, this guy's weak. He's a beautiful man, but he's weak. He can never protect me. He's not capable. He's out of control, because he has no grip on his emotions. When I talk about men shouldn't be emotional, I'm not saying literally. I'm saying that they should feel whatever they need to feel in the moment, just not let it control them, not let it dictate their next action, not let it come out in speech that's unconscious, but that they're in full control, like a king, like a stoic, where anything can be happening. The plane's going down and that pilot is focused, like, all right, I got to stay calm, because if I don't, we're all going to die. That's a strong man. That's a real man. Is he scared? 100%. He's fucking terrified. But guess what? He's not going to let that interfere with what matters right now, people saving people's lives. And I know I go to an extreme example, but it draws a good context of what that really means. So men should be vulnerable. Like, I'm not opposed to that, but I think they need to be vulnerable with other men. Like, that's where I think it goes wrong. A lot of men run to their girls, and then the girls get turned off. So it's like, yo, have a circle of men where you can really share what's really going on. And the guys are going to give you a solution. They're not here just to listen. Like, yeah, that they might hold space if that's needed. But, you know, some men need to feel that validation. And that is kind of a more feminine guy. And that's a whole nother conversation. And you can do that. But you can give them the validation with giving them that kind of lovingly father. Like, dude, like, stop being a bitch, bro. Like, what's the problem here? All right, let's find a solution. Get to work. I don't care how you feel. Like, that's sometimes what's needed. So when women say be open, be vulnerable, what she wants is you to like feel what you're feeling and communicate it to her, but not let it dictate all your next actions. Like, if you're sad and depressed, she doesn't want you to just close off and then go into your room and do nothing. It's like she wants you to explain, like, listen, I'm not having that good of a day. I'm a little emotional, but I love you dearly. And I'm going to get back to work, but I just want to let you know, like, this is where I'm at today. That's being vulnerable. That's being honest. That's being real. But look what you're doing next. You're not dumping that onto her. Like, give me a solution. You're my savior. It's like, no, I'm having a hard day. I'm still going to work, but I wanted to give you this understanding so you can realize why I might feel distant or whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. When I think about that, it's like, I wonder, like, because that's something I feel like I've run into in my own life of like going and like venting,
yeah,
you know. But it's like, when I think about it, it's like women are so good at listening that it's like I feel like it's easy to fall into that trap. And then oftentimes, like, I've definitely had plenty of like, you know, guy friends where it's just like, and I feel like the, you know, not the spiritual kind of woke masculine, I guess, but like the typical guy, you know, what do guys do? You know, go to the bar, watch the game, just like
make a couple small beers.
Talk. Right, right. So it's like not really like you're not really getting at that honest, those emotions, but it's like finding men who you actually can talk to about those things. I've noticed it's just so needed.
It is.
But it seems like lacking, you know.
It's very lacking, and you have to be careful that it doesn't. You have to be careful that if you're doing it, it's with a group of actual strong men. Because if it's a group of feminine guys, they're going to perpetuate the problem because they're going to hold space like a girl would. But a real strong man is going to kind of put you in your place to where, like, yes, your feelings are valid. They matter. But this is what you need to do, because if you don't, your mission is going to fail, or your business is going to fail, or this is going to fail, or that's going to fail. Like, I got into this really bad habit of running to my weakest friends or my mother when I had a problem. Horrible thing to do. They're going to confirm your own bias. They're going to feed you back your self-fulfilling prophecy. Like, oh, it's okay. Like, you have every reason to feel sad. You work so hard. Da, 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 da. They're going to justify it. If you go to the kings in your life or the divine father, like just the archetype of those friends or that uncle or that grandpa or that figure or that coach, they're going to give you a whole different answer. They're going to show you love. It's just not going to be in the form you want. That's tough love, but that's love. They're going to tell you what you need to hear. Like my jiu-jitsu coach, he just did this to me yesterday. You know, I hate losing. Like, I just hate losing. And I'm not good at jiu-jitsu. I've only been training, you know, since December, so I'm brand new at it. And I will almost jeopardize my own body in terms of an injury before I'll tap and give up. Like, and that's not really good. It's just that's very much my competitive nature. Like, I absolutely hate losing. And this guy kept getting me in the same arm bar over and over. You know, it was a blue belt, so he's kicking my ass. I'm a white belt. And, you know, but I wasn't tapping. Like, he'd have my arm and I'd grip so he couldn't pull it and bend it. But like, he's got it, man. I'm just like pulling it on by a string. I'm looking at the clock. 10 more seconds, I can hold it. And at the end of the whole thing, my coach was like, he was like, man, like get your ego out of the way. Like, I'm thinking like, dude, great work today. You worked your ass off. Like, I'm sweating head to toe. Like, that's what I wanted to hear. And I was like, felt defeated. Like, I didn't lose, but I still lost. Like, yeah, I didn't tap, but he won the rounds. And I'm like feeling like shit. And I'm expecting some type of like, cause we kept like falling right in front of my coach. And you know, like, there's a bunch of guys, but we like kept kind of getting in that center there. And he was like, dude, like, your ego is going to get you hurt, man. He's like, dude, one wrong move, you're holding that grip like that, your finger slips, he's going to break your fucking arm. He's like, get your ego out of this gym. I was like, oh, shit. All right, game. And I was like, fuck, I respect that, man. Does it kind of hurt? Yeah, it kind of did. Did it pierce my ego a little bit? Absolutely. But I walked away with like, dude, I'm not going to do that again. That's dumb. That's being emotional. Mm-hmm. That's not being wise. So it's like having those healthy masculine figures in your life, dude, it's game changer.
Yeah. Yeah. And just people that are going to feed it to you straight, you know, rather than like confirm your own. I feel like, you know, if I'm like struggling with something and I'm like just kind of venting about it or talking about it, and it's like, it might feel better to be like, oh, you know, it's just random. Like, you could feel that way about all those girls cheating on you. Oh, it's just, you pick some bad girls to date or whatever. It's easy to like feel that, and it feels like good because then it takes the blame off of us.
Yep.
But in reality, that bitter pill to swallow is probably going to be the one that's actually going to help us 100%, quite a lot more.
Way more.
Yeah.
Because we remember that.
Yeah.
We don't forget that.
Exactly. So it seems like there's a lot of lessons. Obviously, you talked about jiu-jitsu, a lot of lessons men can learn and develop in that way. But what about business? You know, I know that's the subject of your next book coming out.
Yeah.
And tell me what, you know, how do all the concepts of, you know, masculinity that we've been talking about, how does that show up in a business context?
If you're a nice guy, you will struggle in business. When I started my business, as although I was wearing the hat of an entrepreneur from the outside looking in, I was an entrepreneur. I had employees. I was an entrepreneur. Dude, I wasn't an entrepreneur. I was an artist, nice guy, running a business. And it wasn't until I got so taken advantage of by clients, by employees, by competitors, that I was like, fuck, dude. This is like, business is a savage game, man. It's savage. You see the dark side of humanity, like some Robert Greene laws of power, laws of human nature type shit. It all plays out in business, man. It's very much like the drug game, dude. Like, it really is. It's that savage. Like, people want to steal your product. People want to steal your customers. People want to see you lose. And people will also try to like get a deal out of you all the way. And if you're a nice guy, dude, there was times at the beginning of my career, I was giving clients my services at cost. Like, I was making $0. Like, for months and months and months on end, because they negotiated that to me and I didn't know how to say no. I didn't know how to say no, and I didn't want to make them feel bad. So I put myself sacrificing. That's a weak man. That's a nice guy. I'm putting someone's needs before my own, but to the point of my own detriment, to the point where he's not getting the best out of me either. So it's like, dude, I have countless stories and countless lessons. I mean, when you're a nice guy, you can't fire. So I held on to a couple of employees for years because I felt bad. You know, they have a family, they have this, they have that. Well, that's not my problem as a business person. If they're not doing their job and they're not doing what they need to get done, and I've given them multiple warnings with very clear, specific details as to why we're having these conversations, and it's still not changing, and I'm still holding on to them, that's a disservice to everybody. They're not learning the lesson. I know in my head at some level they're not going to stay with me forever. So by me holding on, I'm hurting my clients, I'm hurting them, and I'm hurting myself. And I'm hurting the company culture as well. So it's like, there's so many lessons I could share about how these like masculine dynamics play into business, and even the core of masculine energy. It's mission, it's liberation, it's freedom. Like, that's what the masculine wants. And I think as a business owner, people get into business to become free. Like, they want a sense of, you know, I live life on my own terms. But what happens most of the times is that they get into business and instead of working 9 to 5, they're working 9 to 9, weekends included. And that's pretty typical for an early entrepreneur. But most people don't ever grow out of that, or they don't make it because they don't know how to actually become a business owner. Such a difference between running a business and owning a business, because most people who run a business, they're in the weeds all the time. They operate everything. Shit doesn't run unless they're there. That's normal in the beginning. But I had to learn, like, as a man, I can't be Anton the artist and Anton the CEO. Like, I have to be one or the other. Or I could hire somebody to build systems around Anton the artist so we could duplicate this. Then Anton the CEO could manage Anton the artist systems. So I'm still getting my like kind of piece of it or feel into it, but I'm able to scale. So there was like so many, and that's what the entire book's about, is like how to actually run a freaking business as somebody who is more of an artist, as somebody who's more of a creator and doesn't really understand the principles of real business and what it takes, and how to also watch your back, man, because like I said, there are some savages out there. And the older I get, the more I realize, like, in reflection, like, wow, I've been seriously, not like from a victim standpoint, but people will take advantage of that weakness, man, when money's involved. It's like, oh, this is a naive kid. He doesn't know what's going on. Well, I didn't know, but now I know. So it's kind of cool because that same pain, like, now I advise a lot of, like, clients that I work with in their business. I'm like, dude, you're getting fucked here. You're getting fucked here. You're getting fucked here. And they're like these huge, you know, influencers and these people with big brands, and they don't even know because they're not business people. So it's kind of like I became that more so as I grew, which was, it's been a really cool kind of experience. Again, it goes back to what you're saying earlier, like every single hardship turns into like a beautiful lesson, beautiful way to serve.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it seems like business obviously shows you exactly where you're at.
It does. It doesn't lie.
A certain amount of money.
Nope.
Well, or maybe on Instagram, but
yeah, you know, maybe on Instagram. Yeah. Yeah. It's all about, like, most people don't last after the first 5 years, man. After the first 2 years, most people don't last. I'm almost 7 years in the business. I'm proud of that, man. It's awesome to see, you know, we're thriving. I have two companies and they're both scaling. It's amazing. Like, I'm so grateful. And it's not because I'm so smart or so wise. It's because, like, I was able to find mentors and coaches in different realms of expertise that were beyond mine. Like, I always naturally wanted to lean more towards, like, the mindset, spiritual stuff, because that's what I liked. But as I grew, I was like, yo, I got to become a better business person. Because what entrepreneurs who are artists don't understand is that by learning how to run and scale a business, it actually allows the thing they love, which is the art, to flourish, because it's supported by structure to make the whole thing work. But so many artists, they don't think like that. So they need outside counsel to kind of like help them build that thing, which is what I spend a lot of my time doing now.
Mm-hmm. And I know something, I was listening to a podcast you did on the way over here, and you're talking about, you know, your experience, you know, maybe you wish you would have done it differently in terms of like working for free, you know, and I know you were mentioning on the podcast talking about you kind of offered your services to this company and you're like learning all this video editing, all this stuff.
Yep.
But you weren't really making any money from it. And it got me thinking about, you know, like my journey in coming to Florida was to work under like a neuroscience director at this rehab clinic where it wasn't good money. Like it was actually a big like salary cut compared to like the first job that I had out of college. But somehow internally I knew or had this belief that the skills that I was going to get from like working under this guy would eventually lead to massive amounts of money.
Let's go.
And it seems like,
true.
Yeah, you've experienced the same sort of things.
100%. Yeah. When I was young, before I had my company, I pretty much worked with a social media company, and we had a spiritual teacher that had a big impact on all of our lives. And we were just like, yo, how do we spread this message? And we were all, well, really me and a few others, we were like, it wasn't even really a company yet. Like, it was like this vision. Yeah, there was some money. It's really small. I mean, there was like 5 employees. It was tiny. I don't even know if they were at $1 million a year yet when I first started. And we just saw like a window of opportunity of like, what can we do to amplify this message? So for me, I was like, well, let me learn video editing. Let me learn how to use a camera. Let me learn customer service. Let me learn sales. Let me learn this. Let me learn that. And again, all not for money. I wasn't in it for the money. I was in it to genuinely serve. I had a part-time job kind of supporting my lifestyle. You know, when I say lifestyle, I lived at my grandma's at the time. I didn't have rent and these things. I was dead broke, $12 an hour. But those, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9 months were such a crucial part of my life, because those same skills that I learned for free, donating months of my time. I'm not talking like an hour a day, man. I was dedicated. I mean, after I got home from work, or even sometimes at work, I was working on the free stuff at the small business, just giving my services, which was my labor. And yeah, man, I ended up with those same skills, literally making millions of dollars, like literally. And I look back at that time and it's like, in that moment, there was something in me instinctively, again, similar to you. It's like, I got to see this through. There's something here. I don't know where it's going to lead or where it's going to go. But man, without that, my whole life would be different. Mm-hmm. So I always tell like young guys and even people in general, like, yo, don't be afraid to take a little bit of a pay cut to learn a skill that you're going to be able to monetize for the next 3 decades of your life. My social media skills, whether like I'm looking to exit the business soon, I'm going to sell it probably in the next 2 years. But those skills will always be useful in some category, whether it's my own brand, whether it's advising others on their brand. It's like, so if you learn a skill, man, that is the greatest thing you can ever have. It's like a weapon you earned in a video game. Like, if you got the sword, great. But if you have the bow and arrow, that's even better. If you have the bow and arrow, the sword and the shield, shit, you're starting to become a real good character. So like, gaining those skills is like, it's utility, man. And like, so many people our culture is so short-term thinking. Mm-hmm. They don't look at it like this. So that's kind of part of my message to young men is like, yo, there's never been more opportunity in the whole, like ever in the entire world, because of the internet. There is more opportunity in this time than any time in human history. you also have the ability to learn anything you want to learn. So what do you want to do? Go pay someone to teach you how to do it and get really good, become the best, and boom, you're on your way to mastery. Like, it's that simple, but it's multi-decades of investment, quite literally. And if you're willing to give up 5-10 years of your life for a lifetime of gain, I think that's a good trade. That's a good investment.
Yeah. But what you said there about like people just like feeling entitled to that like short-term success, like, I don't know if this was you talking at the event or somewhere else that I heard this, but basically like a poll they did of like high school guys, and like more than half of them, like 60%, thought they were going to be like multimillionaires by the time they're like 25 or something. It was something like that, you know, and it's just like, obviously like their belief that that was going to happen so quickly, not that they couldn't make that happen in their lives. And obviously some guys really do hit it big at that early stage, but just people's belief that it was going to happen much quicker than in reality. I think that, like, I don't know if our generation, my generation, like, it's like definitely people feel, I think, entitled to that.
Millennials are very entitled.
Yeah.
I'd say we're the most entitled generation, and there's a blessing and a curse in that. The blessing is that people like you and I who are hungry are going to always succeed because our competition is small. Our competition is actually small. And our ecosystem, it might feel big because of our things that we like, and like the people we follow are all successful in this stuff. But in the grand scheme of things, dude, the competition is so small. So for people who are hungry, for people who have a desire for more, for people who aren't afraid to admit they want to make a lot of money and also serve, like, you make money as a byproduct of how much impact you make, period, bar none, end of story. And when you own that and you realize, oh shit, I just got to keep getting better and better and better, and you look around and there's like, where's my competition? Like, there is really none. It's really just myself. It's really just yourself. So that's the blessing. The curse is that, dude, it's sad because these men and women who don't find like healthy outlets to like invest their energy get caught spending a life doing things they don't want to do for people that don't even give a shit about them and would replace them in literally a matter of days. And they're dedicating their entire life force, their entire energy to serving a mission they don't even really believe in. And I'm just like, man, that's not how I would ever want to spend life. That's the most terrorizing thought to me. That is so scary. So that's why I spend a lot of my time helping people see beyond that thinking, because there is possibility. There is a way to change your whole life. There is a way to make $1 million in a single year doing what you love and enjoy. There is a way to scale your company. There is a way to write that book. There is a way to go viral on social media talking about your passions. Like, it's all there. It's just, are you willing to do the work? Are you willing to get the help you need? And are you willing to dream big? Most people do. They're gutless. They're scared to dream big. My thing is like, dream as big as you possibly can and go all in on it. Go all in on yourself. Worst comes to worst, you're 50 years old and you haven't made it. Whatever. Go start some other career. Like, who cares? Go get a job at that point. But wouldn't it be better to know, like, you invested it all to find out it didn't work instead of like, what if? Because I feel like for the person who really invested all, they make it, man. The universe is so gracious. Like, it gives you exactly what you're willing to accept and what you deserve. And if you're working day in and day out and really honing in on your mastery, how could you not get what you're trying to create when we look around? So many people are scared to commit to something, man. They're scared to say, this is what I'm doing. I'm going all in. Terrifies them because they're like, what if I fail?
It's like, even if you do fail, like, you're, as we talked about, you're still acquiring all the skills in the
process. You're not going to fail. Like,
you're setting yourself up
to exactly.
win even in those failures.
Exactly. You're not going to fail. It's going to lead to something if you're truly sincere. For the person who's like 50%, that's not truly sincere. You got to be all in. If you're all in 100%, you will not fail. You'll find a way. I always tell people the ultimate resource is resourcefulness. Period. End of story. And that's a byproduct of the energetic state you're in. If you're in a good energy, if you have a way to break through these traumas, these limitations, these stories, these narratives that hold you back, and you're focused on that outcome and you become resourceful, dude, you will just find a way. It's happened. I have shared so many stories in my book. It's beyond comprehension. Like, we're guided, man. And I believe, like, if you're a good, solid human being trying your best to do good, like, you can't not be blessed. It's literally impossible. So, yeah. Yeah.
I love that because it makes it feel like, again, go back to like talking about the struggles, you know, where it's like, regardless of what the universe puts us through, just that knowing that it's like for a reason and there's something better on the other side to look forward to.
Yes.
As we were talking about before, can get you through any type of hell you're going through in the moment.
Anything. A promising tomorrow can get you through any hard today.
I love that.
I truly believe that. It's just because I've experienced it.
Yeah. Well, so, okay, so you got this book coming out.
Yeah.
It's tell people when it's going to be out.
Yeah, Becoming CEO Squared, probably as of now, I think we're looking at end of June, mid-June-ish.
Okay.
Yeah.
So tell me, I know you already started writing your next book. Yeah. Tell me a little bit about what's next in the life of Anton.
Well, what's next is the launch of this book, Becoming CEO Squared. It's really a strategy book, but also like a guideline to business owners. It doesn't matter what stage your company's at, even if you're doing $1 million a year. I definitely wrote it more towards the entrepreneur on the verge of six figures or already making six figures. Like, that's kind of who I tailored it to. But man, it really speaks to the person who has a very specific skill and they're just getting caught up on the how. Like, what do I do next? Where do I go? What's the strategy? So it's very, very practical. And then there's a ton of, you know, other stuff around reprogramming their beliefs, you know, what they think's possible for them. Kind of like a similar experience of what you were saying you had about like what's possible for your business, what's possible for yourself, what's possible for your relationship. And I provide a lot of stories, real life stories of some really hard lessons I had to learn in business. But that will provide people with a very solid just like reference point for their journey. Like, I always tell people, the reason I tell stories is because when I tell a story, you're seeing yourself in me at some level. Mm. It's just how the mind works. We place ourselves in there. And if I can get through it, anyone can, because I'm not that smart. Didn't go to an ounce of college, pretty much cheated my way through high school. Like, I was not some educated kid per se, formal education, but I just got around good teachers and learned and failed and kept moving forward. And I built something really beautiful because now with my business, I'm actually free. Like, I don't actually have to work. I get to work, like, quite literally. If I decide, you know what, team, I'm doing no meetings for the next 3 months, I'll make just as much money. Everything will roll just as fine. And that's what a business should be able to supply. The cool thing is I love what I do, so I still work, but I don't have to. And that's the reason I got into business in the first place. And it takes years to get to that point, but with the right strategies, which is what the book provides, you can do it. Any entrepreneur can do it. So it's very detailed, very specific on how to do that. And then other than that, growing the events, man. Keep doing the retreats, keep serving, helping people become their best selves, men and women. You know, I like working with men because it helps them. I'm a man, so I just relate with like not having a strong masculine father. Not that my dad wasn't masculine, but just, and not that he wasn't a great father, just it wasn't necessarily, no, it was what I needed exactly. But as I got older, I realized like I needed more. So I suck out different men and they really helped me, man. And I see now more than ever the power of being around strong men and really what it can do for men who are nice guys. Because the cool thing about nice guys, dude, they have such an upper advantage. They have no idea. It's way harder for a toxically masculine man to get on the light side than it is for the light guy to get a little bit on the dark side. It's so much harder, dude, because it takes heart to get into the light side. And a lot of toxically masculine men, their heart is so closed. They don't even know what that means. They're so disconnected from anything they feel. But the nice guy is so in his heart, all you got to do is kind of push up against him a little bit. And that primal dark side kind of wakes up and it's boom. Then he can find his equilibrium. I encourage them to swing to the end of the pendulum a little hard so that they can balance out. But that's really what my goal is to help men become their best selves, help women become their best selves by falling deeper into their femininity and realizing if they do want to keep their business and grow their business, great, do it. It takes masculine energy. But when you come home to your man, take that fucking hat off and become the beautiful, feminine, flowing nature that you are so that your relationship can thrive. Like, I want to give people what they want, but what they want, not what society tells them they want, what they really, really want deep down behind the superficiality, and get back to the core of who they really are. So that's how I'm going to spend all my time. Events, virtual events, writing books, helping people, coaching, all the things.
It's amazing.
Yeah, thank you, man.
Anything we haven't covered that you'd like to touch on before we wrap up?
I mean, I'd love to hear from your experience, like, how was the event for you from an overall standpoint?
Yeah, especially because it was, as I told you, it was like the first event like that, yeah, that I've ever been to. So I didn't really know what to expect coming in, but, you know, I think obviously I had a unique perspective, you know, kind of doing the brain mapping with people there, but also being able to take part in a lot of the stuff. And I mean, for me, probably like a lot of the guys there, I feel like the wrestling that changed everything. Like, you know, just, I think I told you, like, you know, my girlfriend and I went out to dinner afterwards. It was like, I just picked the place, you know, like here, it was so much easier just to lead. That's, and I feel beautiful. Like I had so many insights and things that, like, I feel like a lot of the things that you were talking about that, you know, really struck a chord within me, it was not something that I didn't somehow know already internally, but it was like, that's why I think I connected so much to all your teachings, is it wasn't necessarily, I mean, there were definitely some new ideas brought up, don't get me wrong, but right. But to me, I think what was so powerful was, like, it was strengthening some of those seeds that had already been planted by maybe past experiences, past books, teachings, but that really, I think in that format of a live event and just the energy of everyone there in the room, like, it, you know, you really embodied, you know, and everyone felt it. Rather than just kind of coming at it from a more logical, kind of conceptual level. And
which I know most people do.
Yeah. And I mean, even like the breath work and that definitely, like, caught my attention a ton in your approach to, you know, really help it, like, encouraging people to visualize that future as they were getting their brain waves and their, you know, their whole state into, you know, an altered state. Yeah. Where they're more capable of rewiring their, you know, their brains, but then you really, like, encourage them and kind of empowered them to do so. So I thought it was just an awesome thing to be a part of. And as I mentioned before, it was cool. I got paid to be there, but I definitely would have paid to be there. So it worked out for the best, man.
Beautiful, man. Yeah. Happy. Yeah. That was fun having you there. And, you and your girl created it wouldn't have been the same without you. I know that for damn sure. So I appreciate you both being there and participating, playing full out, and seeing, like, from my end, you know, meeting you on that day one and then seeing how in such a short time, just an evolution of the self, like, just deeper understandings of, like, your truer nature. Like you said, I didn't give you anything that you didn't already have. It was just